Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Final segment of the show today. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJs, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love. All preseason coverage here on Sportsnet 650, which we're about to do some more of, is brought to you by Tiletown. As BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season, receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details. All right, it gets bumped on Wednesdays for the crossover, but let's do it right now. Let's get into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up,
huh? Starting with the headlines, which is, of course, the Canucks keep one key piece of organizational depth. He clears waivers in Phil DiGiuseppe. However, goalie Yuri Patera, who was also on waivers, claimed by the Boston Bruins, who, of course, have a goaltending situation on their hands with the Jeremy Swayman impasse right now. Christian Wallan and Nate Smith also clear waivers for the Canucks. But really, it's Phil DiGiuseppe. We heard Rick Tocchet speak about how much he values DiGiuseppe, right? Called him an unreal guy. We all know how he's earned the trust of Tocchet in the past. So a boon for the organization's depth on the wings that they keep PDG. But I think it's fair to say that there's at least a question of some sort. I don't know how urgently you want to say it needs to be answered, but a question in terms of depth goaltending for the organization to address at some point here, having lost Yuri Patera.
Yeah, and we should all be so lucky to be referred to as an unreal guy by one person in our life ever. You know, that's my basic view of it.
Yeah.
It's high praise. It's like the nicest thing you can say about somebody. He's an unreal guy. You wouldn't even believe how good this guy is.
It's true.
Unreal.
It defies belief how much I like this guy.
Yeah. It seems like he's fake, but he's not. It's unreal.
But he is, in fact, real.
Better than a wall guy. An unreal guy.
And as Tocchet said yesterday, right? Like, hey, if he doesn't get claimed, he's going to be in the mix. And obviously, as injuries crop up, you're going to see Phil DiGiuseppe back with the Canucks at some point here.
Yeah, you would imagine. So, yeah, and then losing Patera on waivers to the Boston Bruins. Had a rough camp. I thought he played pretty well in the preseason. That game in Abbotsford was Vancouver's worst defensive effort by a mile of the preseason, and I thought he kept them in the game. You know, nice performance by him earns an NHL look as the Boston Bruins sort through the Swayman stuff. And look, maybe the Swayman deal gets done and Patera's back on waivers and back in Vancouver, back in Abbotsford anyway, in short order. We'll sort of see how this goes. But yeah, the Canucks now are down to just two healthy goaltenders with NHL experience in the organization. Ideally, you'd want to have three. Especially given that we still don't have a timeline on Thatcher Demko.
So that's where things stand after the roster moves yesterday. The other headline, of course, that the Canucks were practicing again. I thought it was a good point that Jason Bukala made earlier in the show about, teams are soon going to be complaining about the lack of practice time once the regular season schedule gets underway, and kind of clarifies. I mean, we've been mostly paying attention or really locked into the roster battles, and we'll get into the lineup and how it looked at practice here in a second, but I did think that was an important reminder from Books about just, okay, this chunk of practice time from now, from yesterday until when they open against Calgary on Wednesday, a really, really vital time. You've gotten rid of the extraneous numbers from the beginning of training camp. You're down to your group. A really vital time for the team to work on some of the systems things, special teams, all of that going in to the start of the regular season. So here's how they lined up at practice at UBC today. Not a ton of changes, but a couple of interesting differences at forward we can get into. JT Miller still, of course, centering the top line between Danton Heinen and Brock Besser. Elias Pettersson remains with Jake DeBrusque and Daniel Sprong. So it would seem like, barring something unexpected happening, the top six seems pretty set for night one against Calgary, I would say.
Yeah, and very seriously, the prospect of the Canucks having two of the 10 most reliable and proven percentage driving forwards, and that's Sprung and Pettersson on the same line, is dizzyingly interesting to me. Like, I'm so excited to see, can they shoot 12%, 13%? Like, what's this going to look like? Do they have any effect at all on one another's games, given, you know, how good both of them are at sort of finishing what chances they generate? Going to be a fascinating experiment to watch if we get games together.
Sounds fun to watch.
Well, potentially. Yeah, I mean, Splash Bros type stuff. Like, let's go.
I should also point out, this is actually from yesterday, but when they skated at Rogers Arena, they did do some quick informal power play work towards the end mm-hmm. of the practice, and Jake DeBrusque, no real surprise there, was the fifth member of Power Play One, but just wanted to throw that in for the sake of completeness.
Well, and I think we should actually discuss that a little bit further, provided that you've bookmarked a little bit of time for it. The truth remains that Jake DeBrusque has not been like a power play mainstay at any point in his career. I think his career high for power play ice time in a single season is about 185 minutes. Just for context, like JT Miller's over 300 year after year after year. That's been the case for the other four guys, really. I guess Besser's bumped around a little bit more, but like Pettersson, Hughes, Miller, the power play fixtures in Vancouver, they're a lot more experienced 5-on-4 than DeBrusque is. DeBrusque also hasn't been a mainstay in the bumper on a first power play unit. Now, granted, he spent a lot of his career playing on the same team as Patrice Bergeron, who's one of the best bumper guys we've ever seen. So it's not for a lack of ability necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's a lack of opportunity. He's obviously going to get that opportunity out of the gate. But, you know, north-south scoring forwards don't always translate to being like high-end power play guys, especially in the middle of the ice, where you're not getting a lot of puck touches, where the sort of goal is just find quiet ice, be a decoy, right? Some of those sort of soft skills that need to be learned sometimes over time. We might need some patience with DeBrusque, right? This is a big ask relative to what he's accomplished and done in his NHL career to this point, even if he's got the raw tools and the shooting ability and the offensive intelligence where you like the idea, right? You like the idea on the back of a napkin. But actually seeing it on the ice, it might require some patience. Is this market willing to be patient with the Canucks power play after the second half of last season?
What a fascinating question.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rhetorical one, right? Especially if you're seeing on PP2, you know, Daniel Sprung absolutely rip pucks on that left side. It's like, it's just a dynamic that I'm sort of anticipating being a major talking point as we go. It could be a major talking point because DeBrusque's lighting it up, but it also could be a talking point because DeBrusque needs some time to get really comfortable. Again, it's not like when the Oilers signed Hyman and airdropped a guy who'd been net front on power play one for like the league's second best power play in Toronto onto their power play unit, right? Where it was like, we know exactly what this guy does. Yep. He's done it before. This is where he's built to play. This is a player who's going to sort of be picking up some nuances with new teammates. And playing a situation that's at least a little bit unfamiliar to him. My sort of fat part of the bell curve guess would be that it's going to take some time to get fully ramped up. And I'm curious to see how much time they're given in terms of, you know, the fan sentiment in our 650 inbox.
Not long in terms of fan sentiment. From the coaching staff sentiment, well, we'll see. Maybe a little longer. I have no problem giving them a little bit of time to figure it out. I would also love to see Daniel Sprung, not necessarily in that bumper spot, but as the fifth member of the power play with his shooting ability being another right shot, just his overall offensive ability. I'd love to see that at some point in the season. Atu Ratu back with Nils Höglander and Connor Garland, so a good opportunity there after he was the extra forward yesterday at practice. Teddy Bluger skating on the fourth line with Nils Amon and Kiefer Sherwood on the wings. Arshdeep Bains, the extra forward today at practice. No change to the defensive pairings. Again, that seems pretty locked in. The six and the combinations that are going to start the season for the Canucks against Calgary in 1 week's time. Should also mention no Pugh Suter at practice today. Rick Tocchet, who we will hear from in a few minutes, saying that Pugh Suter is day-to-day right now. Just one other thing I wanted to mention as part of the whiteboard here before we get to hearing from Rick Tocchet. I mentioned yesterday that The Athletic, your other employer, rolling out their team previews for the NHL going into the season, doing them in batches, and another couple of Pacific Division teams come up today. The Kings and the Knights come in back-to-back at 16th and 15th overall, respectively, in these projections. The Kings projected to finish with 93 points. I think it was actually 92.7. We'll round up 93 points. A 55% chance at the playoffs. The Golden Knights, the model has them at 96 points and a 70% chance for the playoffs. So we can say, based on the teams that have already been announced, that the model will have the Canucks as a top two team in the Pacific Division. We'll have them over 96 points, which is where the Knights are at. But just wanted to, for the sake of completeness again, because I referenced, you know, the uninspiring showing from the bottom of the Pacific Division in the model. They're now two teams solidly in that middle class, jockeying for playoff position in the eyes of the model, in the Kings and the Knights at 16th and 15th overall.
Dom's model is convinced that the Canucks are an elite team. Like, absolutely convinced. Top 10, even if you assume that they have league average goaltending, as opposed to what the model was assuming.
From Demko.
Well, because the model doesn't know the nuances of the Demko.
Right.
Injury status. So I legitimately, because Dom wrote an over-unders piece, right, where he had the Canucks way over at 99.5, and, you know, it included a graph where he was like, and their elite goaltending. And I just messaged him and I said, I feel like you're talking about this as an assumption. And if that's the assumption in your model, you might want to relax it just a little bit, given that we don't know what's going on, right? That was it. That was just me being like, hey, man, I think you should put your finger on the scale just a little bit and not sort of project Demko coming into the season totally healthy,
and playing as much as he's used to and all those things.
I don't know why I'm, like, nervous explaining this. Like, this all makes sense, right? It, like, shouldn't be controversial.
It does make sense, yes.
So, anyway, I know that he relaxed the Canucks to being closer to league average in terms of goaltending quality, based off the, you know, compelling argument that I made to him. And I still think they were a top 10 team, like, easily. So
yeah, we'll
the
see.
Model is very high.
We'll get the next the final two batches, I would assume, Thursday and Friday this week. So we'll see where the Canucks land. But for me, it's been interesting just to kind of track where the other Pacific Division teams are. And I should point out the Kings projection, which has them around 93 points, 55% chance at the playoffs, takes into account the Drew Doughty absence. So his absence has been filtered in there. Obviously, if he's able to return a lot earlier than anticipated, that increases their point projection, increases their chances of making the playoffs. All right, that's a quick version of our standard whiteboard sub-segments for today. But as part of the whiteboard, of course, we love to hear from Rick Tocchet here on the show. He spoke to Canucks media a little bit earlier today after they practice at UBC. Here is Rick Tocchet, the Canucks head coach.
You Suter for a second straight day. What can you tell us about the evaluation that went on?
Yeah, day-to-day, upper body right now. That's pretty well it.
Made some tweaks to your bottom two lines. What are you looking at there in terms of the options with Hoglander and Garland?
Yeah, I thought the Rats between them in the preseason, they've had some good games together. Another good practice, I thought. I think Gar's a good job of kind of making that line go, and they were good today. So we'll see if they play on Friday, but. Getting Teddy back in the mix is big for us.
You talked yesterday about some hard decisions. How much more difficult could the decisions that are still to come be?
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk to Pasha and Jim the next couple of days. You know, we're going to have to, you know, there's some decisions you got to make. You know, who's staying? I'm not sure if with the waiver thing and all that, you know, that's something that we got to discuss. But like I said, you know, it's a tough day because Deej is and he cleared, which selfishly I'm happy about, and he's still in the mix, that's something that we'll talk about, but going forward, that's a good thing that we have these tough decisions. That means we got depth.
You always talk about levels for guys. Arshdeep has made it through the cuts to this point. What's the next level for him? Be a
Well, I think sustainability. I think his camp's got, you know, he's okay, but I think he's getting stronger. I think I kind of liked his last two games. Whether we get him in on Friday, probably a good game to get him in, see how he goes against, I'm sure Edmonton will have a good lineup again. Can he keep that level? Because we have guys who are pushing for, those spots. So, yeah, just doing the things that, winning battles, no turnovers. You get a chance to score, and like you did, the power play goal was a hell of a goal by him. Just things like that, that's the next level for him.
With his improved compete level, can he be a bottom six guy, Rick? Or fourth line left winger for you?
Well, whether to me, he's an energy guy. Yeah. You know, if he can be, you know, there's different ways to win puck battles. You know, he's not going to go hammer guys, but with his quickness, his puck skills, you know, holding on to pucks, making plays, you know, he can be a very good player for us in that category.
There's some guys we haven't talked a lot about. What do you need or what are you looking from Amon?
Well, you know, I think he's a really good penalty killer. I've actually thought he played really well in Edmonton. Om's the same as everybody. You gotta string some games together. You know, you can't have a good game and then kind of fall off. And that's the hard part of the NHL, being a regular, is being the sustainability. It's hard to do. But he's I thought like the same thing with Baines. I liked his game last game. So he's fighting for positions. You know, we know what he is, and he wants to improve.
Does that apply to Carlson too? I mean, he's down in Abbey, but a couple of years he got a really long look in the preseason, but he hasn't stuck.
No, but he's sticky. He's a first call up guy. Yeah. He could easily stayed, and Baines could. You know, they were fighting for the job. Righty lefty thing. I mean, there's a lot of factors to that, but he's close. You know, but the same thing. You know, can he sustain it?
You talk so much about Rattu, but his ability to win faceoffs in a fairly consistent manner, how does that improve his chances?
Well, you know, on the right dot, yeah. You know, is something that, you know, we had a luxury. We had Lindy last year. You know, he was excellent on that right dot. With Rats, I think if he can, if he does make the team, he can, you know, that's a chunk. But we had, you know, I thought, you know, I actually got Millsy and P that can take the draws on that side, Teddy. I mean, we were a pretty good faceoff team last year. So if Rats is going to make the team, he has to be you got to check the box. He's got to be a really good faceoff guy for us if he's going to check that box for us.
Have you seen guys do what he does, flipping the stick over and pull the pucks back that way?
Not really. I thought Tavares tried it one time. I think a couple of guys have tried it. It's an art. You know, you do get a little more strength on that technique.
Was that part of his arsenal before this training? Is that something he had this summer, just because he saw an opportunity?
I thought he started last year in Abbey. He started, and now he's a plant. I like he's doing it in NHL games. Like, I like guys who are trying it. And he's got, it just makes him a lot stronger on that side.
Rick, you guys lose Patera on waivers.
Yeah.
You didn't use Tolopilo much in the preseason. But it seems, and there's such a state of flux right now with Thatcher and everything else, but it seems that maybe this is a real opportunity for Tolopilo to be the guy down in Abbotsford. Organizationally, say you defer to others, but are you guys, how high are you on Tolopilo?
Well, he's got all the attributes, right? He's big, he moves well. You know, I think the next level for him is, you know, the professional part. You know, I thought he had an okay camp. You know, I think he's got to really now to the next level. You know, watch a Thatcher Demko, how he works out and how he applies himself. You know, even a Lankin and Silas. You know, those guys work really hard. So I'm not saying he's not working. I think he's just got to get to that professional level where he's got to really get dialed in. He's going to have a chance down at Abbotsford to play, you know, a bunch of games here. So I'd like to see how he handles that.
We just saw Dakota Joshua just pop his head out there today. What's it like? We know we don't have a timeline for him, but just to have him around the guys.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, I want him around. Like I said, he'll be coming on the trip with us. Huge part of our team. You know, he's, I think he's good spirits last week before. He's a little bit down, and which is it was expected. I think him being around the guys really helps him. And he's a big part of the guys. So. I love when that guy smiles. Plus, when we get him back, it's like having a major trade, right? Like having a big guy like in your lap that can score. So that's a positive for us.
What did Max show you here?
Son? Yeah, you know what? I think it's unfair because I thought he had a good camp and he played five. I think he played 5 and 7 nights. Man, I don't care who you are. That's a tough thing. So we got to be careful how you evaluate a player, 5 and 7. You know, the fourth game, I didn't think he moved. You talk like you're what? Hang on a second. He played 5 and 7. I thought he handled himself really well. I think he's really upped himself on the depth of the organization. And if we run into problems, I think even Smith, same thing, and Tyler Mueller. Those guys, going down to Abbotsford and getting a lot of ice time, I'm not sure we'd be afraid to call a guy up if we needed those guys. So I think that's a big positive for those guys.
That is Rick Tocchet speaking to the media after his team practice today out at UBC. Just a couple more minutes here of Canucks talk and a couple takeaways. I mean, first of all, a cameo from John Shorthouse, the only capacity that Shorty will appear on Canucks talk because he refuses to be a guest on radio. So we got his voice in at least a little bit there on the show via him asking a question at the availability. Also really good to hear Dakota Joshua around the team. Rick Tocchet says he'll be coming on the road trip, the early season road trip with the team, says he's in good spirits, says he was smiling, loves to see when he smiles today. So that's really good news. Obviously not a timeline or anything, but just on a personal level for Dakota Joshua. My other takeaway from this is, are we sure that Phil DiGiuseppe couldn't still be the 12th forward on this team for opening night, right? Like Rick Tocchet saying he'll be in the mix, and it didn't necessarily sound like he'll be in the mix to be a call-up at some point, but he could be in the mix to play, as we talked about earlier, right? You go through waivers, that clock starts, you're waiver exempt for 30 days. I don't know. It still seems, I guess, a little bit less likely or significantly less likely maybe than Oman or Ratu, but just, again, knowing how he's done it in the past and hearing Rick Tocchet mention, yeah, I'll talk to Patrick and Jim about it. That's something we'll talk about. He's in the mix. I don't know that we should rule him out just yet.
He's not there.
But could it be still a case of they wanted to do it to see if he would clear, so they didn't, it wasn't like a last minute thing that they were finding out? You know what I mean? I don't know. Again, I agree with you. Like, that's a pretty compelling response.
So much.
But it's just, you hear Rick Tocchet speak and it's like, is he like, how much is he going to push potentially to be like, no, I want Phil DiGiuseppe back here and on the team?
So much is going to move here over the next week, right? You know, two consecutive years, the first weekend of October, the Canucks have made a trade, right? Like, they've upset the apple cart. This is a fertile time of year. Like, if we were doing a, like, NHL transactions forecast, it would be like, it's going to rain. Like, this is the time to stay glued to your phone, plugged in to the hockey news, because you know, the Canucks are often active historically, this management group especially, at this weekend to sort of finalize their roster, finalize their, you know, opening day cap picture, on and on down the line. Injuries complicate it. All of this stuff complicates it. Will Phil DiGiuseppe, having cleared waivers, still be in the mix to break camp with the team? I'd be pretty surprised, given that he's not still practicing with them. He could have been waived and remained in practice. The fact that he hasn't, I think, speaks volumes.
All right, we'll leave it there. We're back tomorrow for more Canucks talk right here on Sportsnet 650.